The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
While the actual Olympics are now in question, the Underwear Olympics are underway in Indianapolis. Hey, Pick Six listeners, it's producer Debo here to get you set up for our bonus podcast featuring the best of our Tuesday interviews from the NFL Combine. The following interviews were first seen and heard on CBS Sports HQ, the free 24/7 streaming sports network available on the CBS Sports app, Apple TV, Roku, Amazon, Fire TV, and more. I hope I did that half as good as Brinson. You can tune into HQ for Combine coverage all week. Now, on this episode, you'll hear from top quarterback prospects and high-profile pro coaches. First up, the guy who, according to himself, is considering retirement because of his tiny, tiny hands. Ryan Wilson, Danny Cannell, and Tommy Tran chat with presumptive top pick, despite those 9-inch mitts, Joe Burrow.
Presumably, the number one overall pick, Joe Burrow, joining us here. You just got up done with the big crowd saying, you know, you're not going to not play. You're going to play whoever drafts you again. What's it going to be like when that time comes that you're going to be able to be in the NFL?
That's what I want. I'm super excited.
You're ready, right?
I'm ready to do it. You know, we had the great year. I'm tired of talking about the great year. I'm ready to move on. We won the national championship. It was great. We celebrated for a week. And then after that week, I was ready to move on.
Through this process, we were talking about evaluating all the quarterbacks before, and during the process, a lot of coaches, we were talking to some tight ends, and they said, hey, they wanted to go over some film of my drops, and I do like to try to evaluate games where guys struggle to see how they respond to it. I can't find a game from this past season where you struggled. Maybe a throw or a play, but not a game. Do you have a game that you felt this year was, like, lesser, or that a team would challenge you and say, what happened in this game?
You know, I felt like, you know, I really prided myself in not making the same mistake twice. And, you know, the Ole Miss game, I threw two interceptions. First time I've done that since I was 15 years old. So you could look at that game with the turnovers. But I really prided myself on not letting the mistakes that I made snowball and just relying on my preparation. I make a mistake, go back. What did they do? You know, you could dwell on it, or you can think about it critically and think about what the coverage was, what mistake you made, and then fix it on the sideline.
So we were just talking to Justin Jefferson, your teammate at LSU, and he said Joe Brady was instrumental in the offensive changes, and I know you've probably talked about that. And I know you've answered this question, but I talked to Lloyd Cushenberry, your center, at the Senior Bowl, and he thought the thing switched for you last year in the bowl game when you took the big hit, brought LSU back to win that game. For you, when did the switch happen? Because it seems like this just came out of nowhere, but I think there's more to the story than that.
Yeah, I think everyone wants to point at this one moment, and this was the turning point. I mean, that's just not realistic. You know, I worked really, really hard for a long time, and it was a gradual build-up. I hadn't played for 3 years when I was the starter last year, and I was still learning how to play the game, you know, in practice for 3 years. You don't want to take sacks, and you can't make plays because they'll blow the whistle dead, so you throw the ball away. So that's what I was doing at the beginning of the year. And then, you know, towards the end of the year, I started making plays with my feet, and I remembered that I could run the ball and scramble and make plays outside the structure of the offense. So it was a gradual build-up to what happened this year.
We were joking earlier when we started this morning about the news that you had 9-inch hands and what has been. I think you handled it perfectly by making light of the situation. I personally think it's a joke. Like, I was telling these guys, you should have a sign that just says, watch the tape. Like, yeah. That's all you have to do. But when you work out for teams, what do you want to show them? Is there a weakness that you want to show?
I mean, I want to show that I have, you know, the arm strength of an NFL quarterback. That's kind of always been my thing from high school to my early years at Ohio State, and then to this year, everyone's kind of knocking my arm strength, but I feel like, you know, I have the arm strength to be able to play in this league and play at a high level.
So, I'm sorry, Tommy, do you want to?
No, go ahead, Ron.
I want to ask you about the Alabama game and then the Clemson game at the end of the year. In terms of the defensive players you faced, Trevon Diggs, for example, the Xavier McKinney on Alabama, and also Isaiah Simmons, can you talk about how you worked around those guys? Because those are obviously the big parts of those defense, especially intermediate and secondary down the field.
Yeah, Isaiah Simmons, he's one of a kind, man. He's really, really special, and I always had to know where he was going to be. You know, he lined up middle of field safety. He lined up as a pass rusher. He lined up as a nickel corner. He lined up outside. I mean, he was everywhere. He's going to be special.
One more thing when you are preparing for the event. I know you say you don't like talking about last season, but everyone's going to kind of nitpick stuff, though. At the end of the day, with all the measurables and the physical stuff, it's going to be how you process NFL defensive schemes. How much, and again, going back to your time with Joe Brady, having NFL concepts help you make that transition to the NFL, hopefully in a few months, obviously.
I think the best thing that happened to me was I played in four different offenses in my 5 years of college. And something that I've always been really, really good at, even when I wasn't the starter, was processing the defense and reading my keys, reading the safety, reading the rotation, seeing the blitzes, making the protection calls to get those blitzes picked up. So that's something I've always done really well. It was a process to get to the physical tools that I needed to play at the level I did last year, but I've always had the mental side.
All right. Well, I know you're busy. Appreciate the time as always. Best of luck this week, and we'll look for you at the draft. Appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
If Joe Burrow was the top combine storyline, then Tua Tagovailoa, see what I did there, Brinson, is number two. Our same HQ crew talked with Tua on Tuesday.
It is our pleasure to have Tua Tagovailoa here on the HQ set. We had him 3 weeks ago at Radio Row down at the Super Bowl as well. And so I want to start with this because we had Henry Ruggs just with us here. Mm-hmm. And Ryan was talking about how underrated your deep ball throwing is. So I'm curious to know, do you guys ever have a time in practice where you're trying to overthrow Ruggs because you know he can run fast? Ever happen out there when you guys are in Tuscaloosa?
I don't think I've ever overthrown Ruggs, but in a game, I've overthrown him only because he couldn't see the ball in the sun. That's why I overthrew him twice, and it's very unlikely that you're going to throw someone like that.
I like how Tommy softened you up, because I'm sure the question you've been getting from everybody is your health. Like, how's your hip? Are you annoyed yet of having to answer that question?
No, not really. I mean, that's,
what's been the go-to?
It's going good. Everything's going well up to this point. You know, I've done a lot of my MRIs yesterday, and then we got to meet with the team doctors today. So I'm not too worried about any of that.
So, Tua, can I ask you about Steve Sarkisian and what he brought to Alabama's offense? Because it felt like a lot more pro concepts, a lot less read option, and I feel like that's going to serve you well in the NFL. What was your takeaway from playing in that offense last year?
Well, you know, Coach Sarkisian brought a lot of what they ran in the NFL to our offense. He added, you know, little tweaks here and there, but there wasn't too much of a change as far as how we went about doing things. I guess you could say it's been different because of who he is as a play caller. You know, it was different from when we were under Coach Locksley and then when we were under Coach Dable. They all have their tendencies of what they like to run certain situations and how they like to go about doing things as far as preparing for a team. But I mean, he's been a tremendous help, you know, for me and the guys in the quarterback room this past year.
Obviously, you know, you want to get healthy first, but when you're able to throw, what do you think you want to showcase for teams that are thinking about taking you? Is there a spot that you think you need to show that they haven't seen yet?
I feel I need to show everything. You know, I just want to go out there and leave nothing on the board. You know, I don't want to make an emphasis the deep ball, and then the coaches are saying in the back of their head, well, I mean, why wasn't he throwing short routes? So I just want to be able to go out there, do everything, and just try to impress the guys.
So you measure 6 feet, which is, it's not an issue anymore, thanks to Kyler and Baker and Russell Wilson. So that's tall. So you're good there. But I wanted to ask you, playing in the SEC and facing the teams you faced, we know about the LSU game, what a great game that was. What were some of the toughest defensive players you faced, whether a cornerback or guys rushing you up the middle, that you recall from last season?
Well, it was probably the LSU team. You know, looking at their personnel, they were probably the best team that could match up with our personnel as far as skill-wise, receivers, and our you know, O-line. So in that aspect, they stacked the box. They forced us to throw. You know, they forced me to beat them with my arm. And you know, it was tough. It was tough.
Justin Herbert is a polarizing prospect that could be the third quarterback off the board. He joins us to complete the 2020 QB prospect trifecta.
Justin Herbert joining us with Danny Cannell and Ryan Wilson. We just heard from Joe. He's got a big crowd in front of him. You've got you and your other quarterbacks, too. You guys got in on Sunday. Take me through Sunday through now.
Yeah, so Sunday we arrived, had dinner, got some time to spend with the other guys, and jumped right into meeting. So we met with some coaches pretty late into the night, got some sleep, woke up early, and started the whole process over again.
How has the prep been from the minute you guys win the Rose Bowl? Does it start the day after and it's a flurry of, you know, everything you're going to have to go through, the throws, the lifts, everything?
Yeah, it started pretty quick. It was 2 days after, actually. So I took 2 days
there
off.
There you go.
Went home and spent some time with my family, had some fun there, and was off to Orange County, California. So it's been busy, but it's been a lot of fun, too.
So, Justin, are you willing today to admit that you will play for the Cincinnati Bengals? No, I'm kidding. Don't answer that. We talked at the Senior Bowl, and you said the big thing that teams wanted to see from you that week was leadership. I think you accomplished that. You had a really good week. You're the MVP.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It was a joy to watch you. Are you hearing any feedback on the leadership thing you were talking about? Are there any other things that NFL teams want to see? Because we know you can throw the ball a mile. You're really athletic for 6'6", 238. What are NFL teams talking to you about right now?
I think leadership's another thing. You can always get better at that, and that's something that I felt I took a step forward at the Senior Bowl, and I thought we had a really good week that week. And you can always get better, though, so it's always about taking steps forward and getting better.
When you hear that, does it bother you? Like, the people would question your leadership. Like, as a quarterback, you're a leader by nature just because of the position. You're calling the plays. The ball's in your hand every down. Does that bother you when people question that?
Yes and no. I would say within our program, the guys at the University of Oregon would support me in that decision. And it's not for me to make up the opinions of others. And I'm going to do my best to win games at Oregon. And I feel like we accomplished that. And we did some really great things this year. And I think the rest comes with that. So the opinions of others will come with our hard work.
Man, let's take this moment to take a look at your stats from last season with the Oregon Ducks. Again, you guys finish off the year strong. You guys get to the Rose Bowl, and you guys get that time in Pasadena where you guys get it done. 66.8% completion percentage, the 32 passing touchdowns, and also the 4 on the ground, which we saw on full display in that Rose Bowl game to end the year. So, as we continue the conversation with Justin Herbert here, Justin, when you were starting to sort of prepare for this, you mentioned being down in SoCal, a lot of guys in there, and we're also taking a look at your Senior Bowl stuff. How different is it going from being with Coach Cristobal in Oregon and really a team you've only known now with new guys and new players trying to showcase yourself?
Yeah, it's a fun experience. You get to go out there and play some football with some of the best players in the country, and you know, being under center for the first time was something I had to get used to and had never taken a snap under center for previous to these two months of training. So it's been a lot of fun and new experiences, but it's a learning experience.
You're throwing, right?
Yeah.
So how do you prep for the throw? Like, you pretty much know all the throws you're going to have to make, right? What's the biggest challenge, you think? The fact that you're going to be throwing to guys you've never thrown with before?
Yeah, I think the timing's going to be difficult. These are guys that you've never thrown with and have never really spent a whole lot of time with. And so you got to kind of figure out what they're doing. And I think just as long as you're showing your best stuff, capability, and doing as well as you can, I think you can't go wrong.
So, Justin, there were some people like to say that the Oregon offense didn't necessarily fit what you would do well at the next level. A lot of runs, a lot of screen passes. How do you feel, how will that translate for you going from that offense to maybe a more NFL-ready offense in terms of what you'll be capable of in terms of showing people, okay, this is the Justin Herbert that we've been waiting to see?
Yeah, that's a great point. A lot of our stuff, we did have some checks at the line of scrimmage. A lot was on me to flip protections. So in that aspect, I feel pretty comfortable, and a lot of questions have been about that, so I feel pretty comfortable answering those and things like that.
Justin, we know you're busy, man. Certainly appreciate the time. Thanks for stopping by CBS Sports HQ. Good luck the rest of the way.
Now, the Chiefs will not be drafting Joe, Tua, or Justin. They're pretty set with Patrick Mahomes, thanks to Andy Reid. Pete Prisco caught up with the newly crowned champion coach on his life post-Super Bowl.
All right, Andy, it's been a short time, but has your life changed on that night as a football coach, I imagine, winning the Super Bowl?
Well, it's good. I've gotten a couple free meals. it's been good. I mean, I lock myself down in the office a bit, but I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed the whole thing. So it's it was a great experience with great people, and you know, I you and I were talking before a little bit, but you know, it's funny because you're on teams that have won 221 games. That 222nd one changes things just a bit, which is pretty amazing. But I've enjoyed every bit of it. Yeah.
Coming here as a Super Bowl winner, what's that been like for you with all the other coaches and personnel guys and you know, GMs and stuff?
Well, the guys have been great. I mean, like, you know, the NFL is a tight group, and so you know, the guys are all they've all texted me before this, but just a shake of hand here or there has been, you know, it's humbling. But you also understand the strength and of the fraternity here and how much guys care about each other. And so I appreciate that maybe more than anything.
When do you put last year in the rearview mirror and start worrying about this year?
Well, we kind of did it right away. So I had a chance the Friday after the Super Bowl, flew out to California, take a deep breath, and relaxed on Saturday, and then right back in it on Sunday. So I'm on the Madden committee, or the coaches committee, which is a subcommittee of the competition committee. So we jumped right back in and had to get ourselves ready for the meetings that we have down here. So there wasn't a ton of backup, and here we go. We jumped right into scheme eval and did that. So the combinations kept me busy.
When you get your players back, what's your first message about doing that exact same thing?
Well, I left them with that. You know, the process is always important. We always preach that. They have the schedule. They know it, and they know what to expect, and how they can budget their off season to get themselves back and going. And so I think part of it's being organized and being upfront with the guys, and then their love for playing with each other. I think that's a big thing, and they enjoy the game is what maybe I enjoyed the most about them. It wasn't an up and down issue, during the year with them. They, whatever you told them to do, they were going to do and do it 100 miles an hour.
Andy Reid got there and won it this year. Sean McVay got there and lost the Super Bowl last year. Tuesday morning, he chatted with Pete, Ryan Wilson, and Tommy Tran about the Rams' path to get back and more.
Twitter CBS Sports HQ set alongside our draft analyst Ryan Wilson, senior NFL writer Pete Prisco, the head coach of the L.A. Rams, Sean McVay, joining us here. So, Sean, the story's been that you guys were going to come pretty thin staffing-wise, but you're here, Les Snead's here. You guys have a presence, so take me through what so far it's been like for you at this combine.
Yeah, so really, you know, what we did was we just left our two new coordinators back where they're able to still, you know, look at a lot of the college film, evaluate these players, but then also kind of get a jump on some of the schemes that we'll implement this coming offseason with our players when we get them back in the building. And so we had a lot of continuity with our position coaches, and to be able to empower them, let them go through the process that the last couple years have entailed, kind of how we want to operate and what that looks like, we feel like is the most beneficial approach, and that's kind of what we've done.
Sean, as a head coach, what leads you to make the changes at the coordinator position?
Yeah, really, I think in a lot of ways you're saying, all right, let's evaluate what we think is in the best interest of the team and really how we move forward. And that's really what it looks like. And doesn't mean that they're always the easiest decisions, because we've done some good things over the last couple of years, and guys that we ended up moving on from were instrumental in a lot of that success. But you evaluate everything. You have an appreciation for what those guys did to really establish a foundation. And then when those roles open up, you say, all right, let's try to find the best guy to come in and be a part of a lot of the continuity that we do have and ultimately bring some value to the table.
So, Sean, the Rams don't pick until 52nd because they traded the first round pick.
Yeah.
The Rams, as you know. You can say you have needs maybe along the offensive line, maybe an edge rusher. What is your mindset? What is Les's mindset this week as you come here? And there's obviously free agency to worry about, too.
It's a great question, because really when you just look at the way that the offseason flows, part of what our needs will be predicated on, are we able to re-sign our own free agents? What does it look like if there is any sort of activity that we pursue outside of re-signing our own guys? And then how does that open up some potential things that we need to address in the draft? So what this week is so beneficial for is continuing to accumulate information about these players, getting another way of evaluating them, whether it be the on-field work or some of the interviews that take part. But really that's what this is. is. You're just still accumulating information, and then how our plans unfold are really how the offseason goes, and a lot of it is a result of, okay, if we can't do this, we need to make sure we address it, but we do have plans in place, and ideally you'd like certain ways that we end up having the free agency and the draft to play themselves out, but you got to make sure you have contingency plans as well.
Sean, was it tougher coming off a Super Bowl loss, getting through last season, than you even expected it to be?
It was different. You know, I think really, you know, when you have 3 years of experience to draw on now, you know, each year is a learning opportunity for you. You know, what you realize is that, you know, you got to do a great job of looking at yourself, making sure that you know that other people are looking at that film, and they're going to have ways of trying to defend you differently, but, or really attack you, you know, from a defensive standpoint. So I don't know that I would say it was tougher, but I think last year was a great learning opportunity, excited about the opportunity to try to respond, and that's what we all want to do as competitors.
And you don't get to the postseason. You talked about how reinvigorated, rejuvenated you feel. How much do you think you'll be different as a head coach just with this offseason as you prepare for what is arguably one of the toughest divisions in football?
Yeah, I think, you know, really you look back and you say, all right, what are some of the things that we've done a nice job of? How can you not lose sight of some of those foundational principles? Being more present with the players, continuing to make the relationships the priority. And if you really say each year's a new year, you know, let's make sure you approach it like you did when you first got in here. And then when you say reinvigorated, re-energized, I think when you get some guys in the building along with the guys that we already do have, you know, there's a good competitiveness amongst our coaches of, you know, continuing to learn, trying to evolve, adapt, try to really create our edge as a coaching staff. And those are things that get you excited because you get a chance to really dive into, all right, what are some of the things that these other teams did a nice job of? Does it fit for us? And ultimately, we're all just trying to get better every single day.
Tommy talked about the division and how good the division is. A lot of that has to do with the young quarterbacks, and then Russell Wilson, I think, is still sort of youngish. But you guys have a quarterback in Jared Goff. I wanted to ask you, have you seen anything like what Joe Burrow's been able to do? Because it's he was good last year. He's fantastic in 2019. Obviously, you guys aren't drafting a quarterback, but just to see that from your perspective and know that this is going to be a kid coming into the league and the, sort of the expectations that come with that.
Yeah, I love the way that he's handled himself. And, you know, to say I've really dove into the tape, you know, from a true evaluation standpoint wouldn't necessarily be accurate, but I think you see enough of it, whether it be even just seeing on TV and then watching some of the stuff that they did in the SEC championship and the two games in the college playoffs. Just really impressed with his command, you know, and I thought it was really impressive to see, you know, because they had so many situations where they're getting five guys out there in empty. He's able to really see the field. You can see he's got great big field vision, but I thought I was, you know, extremely impressed with just the way that he was able to avoid, create off schedule, win some guys, whether it be from Clemson or even in Oklahoma, you know, guys get through there. There's the ability to say, I got to move and manipulate the pocket or create off schedule. And I think the ability to extend plays then while also being able to make plays in rhythm, get the ball where the coverage dictates was really impressive. And, you know, I think he's going to be a really good player in this league.
Sean, did Jared Goff regress last year? Because there's a perception out there that he did, and he didn't play as well. Did he regress?
What I think what happened is our offense regressed, but then what I am really, you know, I feel good about is if you look at the last, you know, third of the season, those last five games, he played his best ball. And I think that coincided with our offense having good production where you're scoring up in the 30-point range, and, you know, you're seeing production that's more consistent to what we had seen in years past. And so what I love the most about what last year did is it was a great learning opportunity, but for him, you saw him respond from some adversity, play best down the stretch, and I think that's where he can draw a lot of confidence. I know I certainly have a lot of confidence in him as we move forward, and now having 3 years of experience together, we'll be able to use all of that information as ways to say, all right, let's make year four our best one yet.
So is it a matter of simply the biggest issue is to solidify the offensive line on that side of the ball? And also defensively, what is the plan in a post-Eric Weddle world?
Yeah, so I think really with the offense, you know, it's about, all right, let's make sure that we've got enough versatility to be able to feel like we're always in attack mode. And I think we got a lot of young offensive linemen that got some great experience last year, guys that we feel like have bright futures with us. So that's something, but then you say, all right, well, with the left tackle position, you know, do you re-sign an Andrew Whitworth? He's a guy we want to be able to get back. If that doesn't work itself out, then what are your plans after that? But that's an ongoing evaluation. With the defense, you know, Eric Weddle was such an instrumental part of it from a communication, a leadership, leadership. And he had a great career, you know, Hall of Fame caliber type player. Really loved getting to know him. I learned so much from him. But we do feel really good about John Johnson watching Eric and how that'll enable him to really step into a leadership role. He's got all the skills and the traits that you're looking for from that safety position. And really, he's been a movable piece for us, even going back to what he was able to do at Boston College. And I think you're going to see him really take a big step in the right direction of becoming a real, a real big time player for us on defense.
Back to the offense, Todd Gurley, he didn't have the type of season I don't think that you expected. I don't think that many people expected. Where is he health wise and what do you expect from him?
I think he's feeling good. You know, I think, you know, any of these things, Pete, are a result of, you know, the unit. And I think like offensive linemen can sometimes be unfairly pegged for sacks, running backs with just the run game production. And we truly believe, and I believe that it takes all 11. And, you know, a lot of it starts with, you know, making sure that I'm doing a better job of activating some different things to keep people off balance, like I think we've done in years past. And you don't want to get stale or stagnant, but I think, you know, you want to make sure that you get him feeling good, get him into a rhythm. And when we're able to do that, you know, we're always at our best offensively.
All right. Appreciate the time, Sean. Okay. I know your time's a little bit short with the abbreviated, but we certainly appreciate it. And best of luck for you in 2020.
Thanks,
all right,
guys. Appreciate that.
McVay, pretty much a grizzled vet at this point. Matt Rhule, one of the newer coaches to the block. Ryan Wilson swaps out for Jamie Eisenberg in this interview with the Panthers' leading man.
Thanks very much. We're here on our CBS Sports HQ set. Jamie Eisenberg, Pete Prisco, and Matt Rhule, the Panthers' head coach, joining us here from the Combine. You've been asked once or twice about Cam Newton today. What have you been telling reporters?
You know, that I'm unbelievably excited to coach him. And, you know, I felt like it was important to come here and really talk about who he is and what he's been doing in my limited time with him. I mean, you see a guy who is rehabbing like crazy to get himself back, a guy that's committed to being a great player, a guy that does elite things in the community. And as I've gotten to know him, I've really enjoyed him. And so we have to do our job as an organization to make sure that we help him get healthy and come back and hopefully attack this fall, you know, as strong as he's ever been.
Why leave the college game to go to the NFL for this organization?
Well, I felt really good about this organization, sitting down with, you know, David Tepper, sitting down with Marty Herney. I felt like, you know, at the end of the day, to me, everything comes down to vision. And if we all see things the same way, we have a chance to be successful. And the way I naturally see things was the way they did. And so I knew that it would be a great fit. I had a great job at Baylor. I mean, I was going to probably be successful. I had an 8-year contract. I was making a lot of money. My family was happy. But, you know, this is an amazing opportunity to be an NFL head coach and to come to a place like Carolina that's never won a Super Bowl. I mean, you talk about having a chance to leave a legacy. I saw that and saw other men that were committed to doing it and said, let's give it a shot.
I don't think you take this job with Christian McCaffrey in mind, but I'm sure the allure of having a player like that is part of what the allure of this job is. Can you just talk about the chance to coach McCaffrey and what you plan to do with him building off of that season that he had last year, 1,000 and 1,000?
Yeah, I mean, not many people have done what Christian McCaffrey's done. And when you have a chance to meet him and get to know him, you can see why. His work ethic, his leadership. I don't know if anybody's taking care of their bodies the way that he does, which is why he's been able to answer the call game after game for so long. So I'm really excited to utilize him. We hired a great offensive coordinator in Joe Brady, who's really creative. And I think, you know, the things that Christian's done, we can only continue to build on and utilize him all over the field. And we have, you know, great weapons in DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel. And so to have another guy like, to have those guys and Christian move all over the field, I think is really gonna allow him to be an even more explosive player in the future.
Where's your tie to Joe Brady, or are you just a fan of his from watching him at LSU?
You know, Joe, way back when he was at William & Mary, they came and visited us at Temple. And I think he was a defensive coach at the time. And then getting to know him when he was at Penn State just a little bit. But I've just kind of stayed in touch with him over the years and got to know him a little bit. And, you know, I'm a fan of the way they did things. And not just even so much of what they did at LSU, but coming from New Orleans, coming from, you know, Coach Payton's offense, the things that they did, the way he was able to tailor that to LSU. I said, you know, let's go send a message that we're gonna be really aggressive. We're gonna maybe do things maybe just a little bit differently, and hire Joe, but also hire a really experienced staff around him. You know, Brian Angelico, many years, been with Mike McCarthy and a lot of great coaches, Pat Meyer, a great offensive line coach. So, just felt like we were gonna hire a young guy in Joe and put some really good experienced guys around him.
Talk about what you said a little bit earlier with DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel, and maybe throw in a guy like Ian Thomas as well, replacing Greg Olsen. You have some pretty good skill players there, and especially in the passing game with those three guys. What do you think they can do going into 2020?
Well, you know, DJ obviously had a great year statistically last year, and Curtis has tremendous speed, and you know, he was used in a couple different ways, and so I think that, you know, sort of the thought process we have is just to be really multiple and versatile and find guys who are sort of positionless players, and that's what Christian McCaffrey is. That's certainly what Curtis Samuel can be, and so we're not wanting for weapons, and so we're going to continue to try to expand those guys' roles. And as you said, Ian Thomas is a guy that hasn't really seen the field a ton, but watching the film, we feel really good about what he can do and the roles that he'll provide moving forward.
The run defense last year was just awful, and that's putting it kindly. What do you do to try and fix that?
You know, I think it's just a step-by-step process. You know, it's hard for me ever to comment on what was wrong because I wasn't there. You know, they also had 53 sacks, so, you know, it's just sort of like this balancing act. I think for us, we're just going to put our defense in. We're going to, you know, train our guys the way that we do it, and just believe that if we just do that over time, that we'll be a really good run defense. And so right now, the best part of that is just, you know, coming to the combine, making sure we find run stoppers and guys who can make plays on defense, get into free agency, and then in the draft. So, but, you know, we can't spend too much time thinking about, you know, what happened in the past. We have to just trust our systems and move forward.
We got to wrap things up here, man, but you talked about what we do, and you have your experience in the NFL, but now you go from going in college where you're helping players get to the NFL and now being in a position to find those prospects to fit your team. What's the approach and what's your process like, especially as we get ready for this week?
You know, just try to be really disciplined, you know, not taking anything for granted. You know, evaluation, it's not just about what a player can do. It's also about who he is and how he fits. And so I really enjoy the interview process, the informal interview, the formal interview, just even walking around and seeing players. I think you get a great feel for who they are. And I think if we find the right people who are also really good players, we'll have a great locker room and a great team. And so I take this process very seriously. And I know our scouts do, and I know our coaches do as well.
People will talk about expectations. Do you set some for yourself as you get ready for 2020?
Yeah, I think we're too far away from that right now, to be quite honest. I think right now my expectations are really about this combine and then the off-season program and then the draft. You know, I haven't even met all the players yet on the team, so it'd be hard for me to start making a bunch of, you know, predictions or comments. I just know that right now the team's going to be built through the draft first, and so we have to make sure we do a great job at the combine.
Fair enough. Certainly appreciate the time. Enjoy it.
Thank you
for joining us here on HQ with Pete Prisco and Jamie Eisenberg. Matt Rowe joining us here. Back to you guys in the studio.
And last up on our interview slate for the day is Jaguars head coach Doug Marrone. Questions courtesy Tommy Tran, Pete Prisco, and Jonathan Jones.
Joining us now, the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, Doug Marrone, along with senior writers Jonathan Jones and Pete Prisco. Pete, you're Mr. Jacksonville. I'll give you first word
used
here.
To be.
Doug
used
too.
To be.
Miss it? I think still is.
A little bit, yeah.
The weather?
Fort Lauderdale. I don't miss the weather. Fort Lauderdale weather's better.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a little warmer. The whole process last year, the way it played out, you come back. Were you surprised that you were brought back?
I don't really look at it that way. You know, I just think that, you know, if you start thinking, am I coming back? And well, then your focus is off what your job is. So my focus has always been, you know, for the players, the coaches, the fans, obviously the organization. So, you know, my job is to make sure you're getting the best of these players every single day. And that, you know, decisions that I'm not involved in, whether I come back or not, I'm not gonna overthink it. I'm gonna do the best job I can, because that's what I owe those players and those coaches and the fans.
The decision you will be involved in is what you guys do at quarterback. I won't beat around the bush. I learned to get to the point from Pete Prisco over
point.
Here. What are you guys gonna do at quarterback?
Yeah, right now we feel, I mean, it's not a bad situation. I mean, you got two guys that have shown that they can play, that they can win games. I think that, you know, both quarterbacks will come in. I think that, obviously, you know, Jay Gruden, we've hired to be our offensive coordinator, so we're excited about that. You know, we'll look at both quarterbacks. We're evaluating what they do well schematically, you know, what they like to throw. Our run game will be our run game, you know, obviously what we're doing with the running back. So, you know, both players will compete. I don't think there's anything wrong in that. I think that, you know, you go in there and you compete, and, you know, hopefully someone will change themselves, you know, or separate themselves, and that the team can see it. Someone always says, I got the question, like, you know, when do you make that decision? Well, there's not really a date, and it's not really going to happen until we start playing, you know, in the preseason, because, you know, for me at that position, one of the things that's important, along with really every position, that the players can see who the best player is. You know, the players want to make sure you have an obligation to everyone in that locker room that you're putting the best player out there. So that goes into it, too, where, you know, you make decisions when it's very clear and everyone can see it, whether it be coaches, scouts, and players.
The anticipation, then, to be clear, is that both of those guys will be going into training
camp. Absolutely, yes.
So who takes the first snap?
I mean, we've done different things where you go in there. Sometimes
we're trying to get to that, by the way.
Yeah, it can be years in a league. But at the end of the day, you alternate who takes the first snap each day. You know, and it's a shame that you have to go through it, but everyone will look at everything. You know what I'm saying? Everyone will be looking to see, you know, obviously both players have got to go with, you know, snaps with the first team, so you're going to have to be able to put it in there. You know, who takes the first rep? I haven't put a lot of thought in that yet.
Doug, once you do pick a guy, is he the guy then that he's going to play? Because sometimes when you have a quarterback controversy, whatever you want to call competition, one guy will get the job, and then he's looking over his shoulder in week three at the guy right behind him. Will you pick a guy and stay with that guy?
Well, I think that's a problem that comes in. I think if you're looking over your shoulder and that's causing you not to perform well, you know, then obviously there's problems. I think that, you know, at any position you have to make a decision of what's going to be best for your football team, what gives you the best chance to win. So, you know, it'd be like saying, hey, listen, you pick your left tackle. You know, if you pick him and he's your left tackle, you're going to go with him. Well, what happens if that left tackle's not playing well? What am I going to say? Well, coach, you said you're going to stay with him and you're going to go with him. What about the other guys on the team? You know, how's it affect everyone else? So for me, you know, now are you committed to that person? Yes. As long as he's doing everything he has to do for us to be able to win at any position, yes, I'm committed to that player. You know, but hey, listen, if there's a little bit of a struggle, are you still committed to that player? Yeah, we're going to try to work him out of that struggle. There's no doubt about that. You know, my philosophy is, hey, you got a receiver and he go ahead, you know, early in the game and he drops a football. Well, let's get to that guy right away. You know, let's get him going right away. Now, if he drops another one, hey, there might be another shot, another one. Then, hey, mate, today's not your day. You know, let's do something different. So, I think I don't want people to read into a lot. Yeah, you're going to pick a guy and you want to stay with him. But, you know, if there comes a point, if he's struggling, you're going to support him. But if there comes a point where, okay, now listen, we've got to do something because it doesn't help us, give us a chance to win, then you make a move.
When you talk about looking at everything with the quarterback situation, but then also your team, obviously the Jalen Ramsey deal gives you guys an extra pick here. How do you think you guys will tackle, you know, you're here evaluating some of the talent, getting ready for the draft in Vegas?
Yeah, I think we'll go through the evaluation process first. So in other words, we'll look at the players, we'll look at the list, we'll look at free agency, seeing what, you know, where we can fill and we make ourselves better. And then I think a lot of times then you just wait until you get there to draft day. I mean, you don't really know. You can't say, well, we're going to do this. Well, if you're going to do anything, you need somebody else to do it with. And right now, those conversations really aren't going on.
Before we get to the draft, though, we have free agency, obviously. Rewinding the clock to a difficult thing when the NFL Players Association came out with the statement about the fines that the club have been imposing on players. And, you know, at the end of the statement, warned potential free agents about if they want to go to Jacksonville because of this. What have you guys done over that since that time, and how are you trying to tell agents or potential free agents about what kind of place Jacksonville is?
Well, I'm one of the few guys that you know, obviously I was part of the NFLPA, and I was one of the ones that went on strike in 1987, you know, and lost whatever we lost, three or four game checks, you know, and Gene was the guy and head of the union, and, you know, so I've always been, you know, a guy to make sure that our players understood what the rules were, because I'd get upset, like, you know, hey, listen, the PA is there to protect you as a player, and trust me, I know about it because I was a player, and don't all of a sudden use the PA when things are going bad for you and you need them to come in. Make sure you know the rules and what's going on and be able to change it. So, you know, I've always been a huge proponent of that. And then I have an open door policy. I mean, I have no problem with them coming in at any time and doing it. And, you know, DeMaurice Smith, I tell him all the time, hey, you want to use the meeting room? You can do that stuff because, you know, you want a good relationship, obviously, with them. So I think it's one of those things where, you know, it's, you just have to keep proving it every day with our players. I think if you ask our players or if you ask anyone where I come from, you know, as far as what the union means, you know, I have a great deal of respect for them because I've been a part of it and I know what they do and they protect our players.
Is playing two games in London a challenge for you as a head coach?
I think it's a challenge for everyone. I think it's a challenge, you know, probably for a fan first and foremost, you know, when you take two home games and you go out there and, you know, so I understand and I feel, you know, the challenges, you know, for them, you know, especially the ones that obviously can't afford to come out and enjoy the time out in Europe. And, you know, and then we have a pretty darn good fan base in London too. So I'm sure they're excited. So you understand where they're coming from. And then the business side of it, you know, we want to be able to sustain Jacksonville, you know, to hold an NFL football team, you know, the Jaguars. So, you know, we're hoping that, hey, listen, this is not going to be a long-term thing. It'll be evaluated each year. But if that's what you have to do to stay, because I understand the business challenges, you know, that we go through as an organization. So, you know, I understand what our players, I understand what the coaches. So I've got a pretty good feel of how everyone feels about it. And then, hey, what can we do? Well, hey, listen, you know what? We can have a heck of a year, and then maybe at the end of the season get ourselves in a position where we can have another home game. You know, I mean, that's what I can do. You know, that's what I can control. And then for our players, I understand it's going to be a challenge for them to be away, kind of like if it's a West Coast trip. You know, we're going to be away for 10 days, you know, but it's a little bit more challenging when you're out of the country. So, you know, my focus is to make sure I'm going to make it as good as I can and comfortable for our players so that they can focus on the game. And the same with our coaches. So, you know, there are a lot of challenges, and I feel everyone, you know, what they have to go through. But at the end of the day, you know, we're going to go out there and we're going to be excited about it, and we're going to make it hopefully an advantage for us.
All right, Nick. Well, certainly appreciate the time. Enjoy the rest of the week, and good luck in 2020.
Thank you so much.
Doug,
I appreciate
joining us here on CBS Sports HQ.
If you made it to this point, thank you for listening. We'll still have our normal episodes breaking down the latest from the Combine, but also stay tuned for these bonus interviews throughout the week. And do the download, subscribe, 5-star, follow thing, and we'll chat soon.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.